So a few weeks ago, I decided to spend a week in Yucca Valley, which is in the high desert of California, right by Joshua Tree. I stayed in one of the most amazing Airbnbs I've ever stayed in, and I decided what better way to learn the whole Airbnb game by talking to my Airbnb host. I sent him a message, and luckily he was down to meet up. So in this video, I basically ask him everything about his business and how he's been able to accumulate over 10 Airbnbs in the area. The crazy thing is that he's hand-built most of these properties himself, and yeah, talking to Ryan was just super inspirational. So without further ado, here is the full interview that we did. Can you tell everyone your name, your age, and then what do you do?
I'm Ryan, I'm 37. I've been working in the high desert for 9 years.
So what do you do in the high desert?
So for the last 9 years, I've been fixing up old rundown cabins like this one. Basically buying places that when I first started were virtually unsellable. A lot of them sat vacant for like 15, 20 years. So buying those sort of discarded homesteader cabins and fixing them up and turning them into places to rent out to tourists.
Yeah, so I know Ryan because we were renting out one of his Airbnbs. And I would actually say it's my favorite Airbnb I've ever rented. I don't know, the views and then like just how it's done is so amazing. So I wanted to talk to you and like see how you do it. I know you've been like pretty successful doing this. So like how did you get started?
I was living in Germany. I lived there for 4 years and I had a completely normal job. I was working for a magazine. It was Monday through Friday. They switched from a paper magazine to internet and it's just like they ended up going under. And I had just moved into a new apartment and wasn't sure what I was going to do for work. I had been on a few work trips. This was 2009-10 where I had used Airbnb and I actually just put my apartment on Airbnb and stayed at a friend's. Over the next like 2 or 3 years, I kept getting new apartments and then renting them out. Whenever I got a new one, I would do some renovations to it.
Okay.
It was a very time and place thing. Like it was definitely something that would be considered more on the shicier side of things today to rent and sub-rent a place. But at the time, no one really knew what short-term renting even was.
Yeah.
It was like the type of travel, like you had to really explain like, oh, so like I give you the keys and they're like, it's my apartment. So it was a different way of traveling altogether. And the best part of that was whenever I got an apartment that was a long-term rental and then making it appeal to short-term renters. So if it was painting walls, getting secondhand furniture, changing the lighting, things like that. And then, so through that, that was the part that I loved the most. Back in 2013, it was really one of the few places that did have a cool factor and I could afford a place.
Yeah.
So it was the affordability. There's very few hotels even today out here. And the draw of the national park and how many people visit it.
So you're living in LA right now, right?
Yes, so I lived out here for the good, like maybe 4 or 5 first years.
Okay.
And then the last 4 years, I've tried to have Los Angeles be more of home. I did the like back and forth, half there, half here thing. It was definitely difficult to like have two lives and basically zero lives at the same time.
So I think we were talking earlier off camera and Ryan like actually builds these himself. Like he literally does like flooring and planks and stuff, right?
Yeah,
I don't know the terminology.
The framing, yeah.
Framing and stuff, yeah. The lights, electrical. How many of these homes have you done?
So this would be the 11th one. They've all been different. I would say the first handful of them, the first 4 or 5, I did absolutely everything. And I lucked out with my first 2 projects because they were brick houses. So there wasn't anything structural that could be done. Then like that first group of houses, it was mostly a financial thing. There wasn't anything in the budget to pay people to do the work. And I think part of the way that I've been able to parlay from one project to the next has been the keeping costs down.
Right.
You know, people would ask how much it costs to renovate one of the houses. And for me to say like $15,000-$20,000 would like blow people's minds. It was helpful that I built all the furniture myself. I made all the light fixtures myself. I found that like you could get $300 or $400 worth of wood and turn that into 3 beds, a dining room table, a couch, 6 bedside tables.
No way.
Always that feeling when you like have the wood like in a pile and it's going to turn into all of these different furniture pieces. And part of that for me was that came from my indecisiveness with being able to choose furniture.
Okay.
Like if you're buying things online, it's so difficult that things just don't necessarily go with what it is that you're imagining. So if you build it yourself, it ends up fitting perfectly.
Yeah, it's also really cool because at our place, like the beds, the big table, right?
The big V table.
Yeah, that thing is sick.
Yeah,
I love
the idea of that was kind of that it was like a conference. Like you're basically like, you're like conferencing the view, if that makes sense. You're like
That's perfect.
Interviewing it.
We're renting it just to do work and
yeah.
like film some YouTube videos and whatever. And I sit here and she sits there and we're like facing the view. It's super cool.
It makes really good. And then also too, with more people to be like inside the V.
Yeah.
There's something about being in a like a dining setting that can make me anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there's like, if it's just one large group and it's like formulated in a square or a circle for like just basically one person to carry the whole group has been like kind of overwhelming for me. So like to design furniture in a way that like it partials it off to that's different cool. smaller conversations.
Yeah, I love that. That's sick.
I've also moved in the direction like with the, that was like the first batch of projects. And then the second batch, I don't do a lot of the stuff that lost its romance. So like the stucco, the whole house drywall, like, so if it's like one thing, then I will do the drywall. But yeah. like if it's the entire house, it makes more sense to have people come in because they've got like the correct, you know, like all of the right tools to just like, you could drywall this house in 2 days.
Right.
And so some of that stuff, basically the things that no longer have that like return on the effort
right.
for me.
Just But you're still like doing a lot of stuff. Like I feel like you're super hands-on stuff.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. So like put in all the insulation. The electrical is the thing that I'll never get rid of. It's the most thrilling.
Still do it.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is that like when you're rewiring the whole house, it's so much less scary because you basically don't connect anything to the panel until the end.
Okay.
So all of these wires don't have and will not have power until the last minute. Whereas if you're doing more of a rehab with electrical and you're like trying to figure out what's going on that's already there, that's when it can be. Okay. I'd say if you're doing a like an old work renovation project, like you're gonna get shocked. Like it's like,
you've been shocked before?
Oh yeah, like it is. But like for the majority of these like yellow wires, it's just uncomfortable. Something that like when it happens, it feels eerie almost. Like you're just like, I really would like to avoid that ever happening again. But also you just keep going.
But you're not like stuck to it.
You're not like, stuck to it. Yeah, okay. You're not like, I think, you know, there's kind of a fear that it like travels to your heart or like makes your blood boil or things that can do at higher voltages or wattage. Unless you're dealing with like thicker wires, it's not so dangerous.
Okay. Can you take us through your first deal that you ever did? Like sort of like the financials?
Yeah, so that was when I was coming back from Germany. I basically had saved up money from doing the short-term rentals there and was able to put all of that into the first project here. The first house was $53,000. It was vacant for about a year. It's in the Joshua Tree town, so didn't sit on the market for as long as some of the other ones. Mm-hmm. And it was a brick house. There was a dude that was living in the guest house of that house, which was really gross. and because he kind of like didn't want to leave, it was like questionable if he was going to. And then I think the biggest thing, or what's always made the most sense for me, is living in the project while I'm fixing it up, because I think that does a bunch of stuff. One, you don't have to commute, obviously you're there. So it makes your whole day potentially from like 7 or 8 until midnight. So it's like you have this whole day to do whatever project it is you're working on. I think that when you start to get into that groove, it becomes less like work and much more just like, this is like all of my operations. I think the other really great thing about that is I think there's no better way to understand the space. And being in it, I've surprised myself so many times how it would be like 3 or 4 months into living in the place that I would then be like, oh, I should do this. And like, I was like, how did I not come up with that before? You know, like you're sitting in one room. And I think some of it too is like the day to night, you know, the different lights.
Right.
There's been certain times that I've lived in the places and I've had people say to me like, Ryan, you got to take a break. Like you've got to like do something that isn't this. And I think that I always just kind of like powered through, and I always kind of saw taking breaks as that it was risky that I wouldn't come back to it. Right. That it was like, if I took a break, I'd know what it'd be like to not be working. And so to keep going with it was kind of the only option.
So you've been on this grind for many, many years.
Wow. On the grind. Yeah.
So your first place, what was the timeline like? And then how much did you spend on that first renovation?
Okay, yeah. So the first one started in November of 2013 and then was finished by like May. It was a good sized house and it had that guest house and the main house and definitely some work on the outside that needed to be done. Keeping in mind too that things were way cheaper then. I only paid one person to run some plumbing to a laundry room. But I lucked out too that like this was one of the ones that was brick. The windows had just been replaced for the sale because it was another one that I had mentioned like wouldn't have been financeable because the windows weren't there. And they had also redone the roof. So that was some helpful, you know, place to jump off from. And so I would say probably $20,000 to $25,000.
And how much were you like able to get for that per night? Or?
And so that one's, it's a popular house. It like, it was built even before the homesteader cabin. So it was one of the original structures in Joshua Tree. So it's got a really cool historical draw to it. There are like pandemic prices and then there's like these during and post pandemic prices. I would say that like 170 during the week and then maybe like closer to 300 on the weekends.
Wow. So you pretty much don't really need to like work anymore, right?
I think that as a fellow entrepreneur, like, you know, that not working is not an option. Right. When someone says, oh, you don't need to work, that actually makes me more nervous because I don't do great not working. I guess on one hand, I wish that that were more of the goal.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to be in a position where if I needed to take some time off, then that would be an option. But I do more so feel like it's more of an opportunity to find out what to do next.
Got it. We were talking earlier and I was saying like Ryan has to get into online education.
Okay.
He's such a, like, he knows so much about like doing these projects and so many people are super interested in doing them themselves or like at least exploring it as a possible like, you know, income source or passion project or whatever. You could help a lot of people while building like a really solid like online business.
I appreciate that. It's been hard for me to feel like what it is that I'm doing is something that other people would appreciate seeing or learning. Yeah, I don't know if there's maybe something about so much of what I've done like has been self-taught that I would need to like learn how to teach it. I certainly appreciate that because every time I have someone come in, you know, you finish a project and because you've been along through the whole stage, yeah, you don't necessarily feel the awe of it or you don't see like your mistakes or you see like, oh, that was that day that really sucked or all of the difficulties throughout it. But then like when you meet a renter and they come in and they're just like, they're floored by it or really appreciative, it does help put it into perspective, like what the grand scheme of the accomplishment.
Yeah, you're basically creating like these experiences for people.
Yeah.
And it's like you create these unique properties that most people like don't get to live in their normal house, right? Like for example, the place we're renting is super unique. So it's like, I'm very appreciative of you for like creating that type of like house so that other people can get to, you know, experience it.
I love it when I see people come visit this area and then they like, they'll see a rabbit or like, so, you know, what's that? Is it, is a quail? And like with the time out here, you know, you kind of just take the nature for as expected. And so to give that experience to people that are, you know, going through their daily lives in the city is wonderful.
Well, what are some like common pitfalls that people run into when building or starting an Airbnb?
One of them, I would say, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily a pitfall, but this cabin and two of my other ones were zoned recreational cabins.
Okay.
One frustration has been that you're not allowed to short-term rent recreational cabins. Mm. So I've been in the process, and part of why this one has taken since last September is converting this from a recreational cabin to a single family residence.
Okay.
Single family residence has a certificate of occupancy, and it's so it's allowed to be occupied year round. A rec cabin traditionally was built in the 50s, doesn't have water or a bathroom. So that's been a tough process. I think that there's something like 2,500 rec cabins in the high desert. So there's quite a few of them. A lot of them are dilapidated beyond repair.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them when you're driving around are just like kind of that could never be restored.
I
would say that one of the current pitfalls is people buying houses out here that are overpriced. I think that in the pandemic, the prices got so crazy and people buying houses for $600,000-$900,000. I think that the return on that investment isn't going to be what they expected, especially at times that it could be slower or the market could be oversaturated or your place could just like frankly not be unique, could be difficult. There's talk of people that have done that already during the pandemic and are already turning around and selling them.
Because there's so many of these like sort of like cookie cutter spots that are like in the neighborhoods.
And they all look the same. They all have like, that's been one of my frustrations is there's like a, I've always loved that Joshua Tree didn't really have an identity.
Yeah.
When I first started, and I still kind of believe, I mean, I still think that it's figuring it out now. If you were to renovate a house in Palm Springs, it would have one specific look. It would be mid-century modern. It'd be white. There'd be splashes of bright colors, mm-hmm. the pool. Whereas Joshua Tree, I think one thing that I've enjoyed about the renovations out here is that they have all been very different. Mm-hmm. There's been no rubric to what Joshua Tree should be. And I think you mentioning some of those like cookie cutter, like there's this, the desert boho design that's like the macrame on the walls, you know, sort of like native situation, which bothers me because it feels a little bit like we're trying to appropriate from Sedona or New Mexico and bringing that look to like an area that has nothing to do with that aesthetic. It seems like a lot of them just go on Airbnb, look at other houses and then just and get the same thing. And so that drives me crazy.
That creates so much competition. I mean, like, or like there's so many the exact same house that you can get, right? So like, why would you pick that one?
And I think some of those people are hurting too, because they all look exactly the same.
Yeah. Would you go out and buy a plot of land and build a house on it? Do you think that's smart?
On one end, I think it would be interesting because it'd be something that I haven't done. In this process, the building permits that I've gone through for the three cabins that I've been converting from rec cabin to single family residence, it's the same process as new construction.
Okay.
So those permits are under a new construction permit. They require the same things. I think that it's like a little little bit looser on one hand because they do know that the structure does already exist. But as far as like percolation tests, soils reports, septic certification, all of those things are the same for this process, which has been grueling. It's always difficult too, because no matter which jurisdiction you're in, there's always going to be different interpretations of the code and sort of different levels of awareness of what is required. And so with all three of them, there just have been so many discrepancies in what it is that each plan checker focuses on. So I think that the new construction idea could be really cool, but I think that my advice would be that it like to go into it knowing that it's going to be extremely difficult, and then even harder than that, and then harder than that.
So do you have any like general advice for people that want to start an Airbnb here in the desert?
I think the first thing would be to really like it out here.
Okay.
Because I think that it's not for everyone. I know some people that do rentals out here and oddly enough don't really like it. And so, or like can't do like it enough, but like can't really like hack it for more than a night or two.
Right.
And so I would say that the biggest thing would be to, you know, the drive to be out here yourself. Because I think that no matter like how great the management company is, or if you manage it yourself, I think it's always going to require coming out here. And that is definitely a varied season experience, from the 100 degrees that it is today to like the below freezing that it can be in the winter.
So I didn't know that it snows here.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It totally snows. When I first started, it used to be like every other or third year, okay. But lately it's been every winter it will snow.
For how long?
It'll be like maybe two or three times a winter, and you'll like more often just get like the flurries and stuff.
Yeah.
But then like I'd say maybe once or twice a winter it'll like fully blanket.
And it's like actually super cold outside.
And it's very cold, yeah.
Whoa.
Really quite cold. And it's interestingly, it's part of the Joshua tree, the process of propagating more Joshua trees. So like the snow has to sit on the seeds for them to germinate. So for some reason they have to like go through some sort of freeze process.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So besides like having a passion or like enjoying the desert, like what else should people?
It certainly wouldn't hurt to like have a passion for houses. Working on houses isn't everyone's forte, but I think having an open mind to doing that stuff and having an open mind of what you are capable of, because I think so many people write themselves off as incapable of doing certain improvement tasks. And it bothers me because I think that people are so much more capable than they psych themselves out to be. You know, if you pick up a pen and try to draw something, like you're not going to be good at it. But then if, you know, you do it like 15, 20 times, like you're going to get better.
Yeah.
Or you watch videos of people drawing it, and that certainly helps. So I would say to have an interest in improvement of spaces and to have an open mind about failing and being able to keep going and improving yourself.
So sort of just like have the interest, but then like just get started and do it. And then like you can learn along the way, right?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that if you did want to have a short-term rental and if you did want to have the interactions with the guests, I think it'd be really important to like have a certain amount of patience. I guess the ability to like provide good customer service and then like bring the frustrations to a different outlet, because people can be very difficult and it can be hard dealing with the public. I think being able to like swallow some of the pride that gets stepped on and mistreated, because people can be pretty rough. It also can be also seasonal. I find that in the summer people are much more mean to me. I think it's just because they're like grump. It's just hot and they're just like agitated.
Oh no!
Because it's funny, like come the like perfect months like March, April, May, and then like October, November, people are just like, I don't hear from anyone. Like everyone's just like in the park. They're just like out exploring. And then like either when it's really hot or it's really cold, people are just like, I need service, or I'm disgruntled about everything.
Wow. Dude, this is like super interesting for me too. Cause like I was nervous coming out here, cause I was like, dude, this guy's like a genius at like what he does and stuff.
Thank you.
What are the most important hires for an Airbnb business?
I think the number one thing is cleaning. So I think that if you have great cleaners, they're really the forefront of the operation. They're the ones that are at the house every other day. You lean on them a lot for even small maintenance things, even if it's just checking something to be able to report something back. Having them be both great cleaners, but then also I think that their affinity for you is important. I think that having a relationship with them where you're not just like a homeowner that's like tasked them to clean. With businesses, sometimes it's important for there to be a line between management and employee. But I think in this case, it's like having a personal relationship with them. And I think that makes the whole thing more enjoyable for everyone. For me, it's made more sense to have the management be in-house than the idea of handing my places over to someone else right. for a flat rate.
So you manage them yourself, or do you have someone that helps you?
Yeah, someone that helps. I've gone back and forth between having someone and doing it myself. So for the first like 7 years, I did everything myself. And then maybe a year and a half ago, I hired someone to do a lot of the communications. And that was a difficult thing to do, I think, because I did all the renovations myself and lived in the projects. It was really difficult. I think one of my other areas to work on as an entrepreneur is my ability to delegate.
And I struggle with that too.
Yeah, it's really like, it's like, oh, I'm like, I'll just do it myself. Then I don't have to explain it to anyone. Right. And then I can just make sure that it's done right. That's been a difficult thing. I am currently back to managing them all myself. Oh. As an entrepreneur, I think that there will come a point in time that you realize, okay, I've had it with this and it's worthwhile for me to go in a different direction. And I really did feel that when I was able to put the management workload over to someone else. But what happened was the moving on to something different didn't happen. And so I actually just ended up feeling like we were talking about earlier about how I actually felt more lost because I didn't have that purpose that I had before of somewhat of a schedule of things that I had to get done. And so when I was able to take the houses back, I've actually even felt better. Whereas I'm grateful for the person that did help me for that year was because she was like, you want me to do this? And I'm like, oh, I don't know yet. And then she kind of had to like inch her way towards more responsibilities and was patient with my hesitation to give up the reins.
What are the top platforms to use, like software?
I actually don't use any of them.
You don't use any?
What? No, I know. I think that would be something to look into.
Yeah, don't people automate like their messages and like...
Yeah, so there's like on Airbnb, there are scheduled messages, okay. which actually was one of those things that like when I started doing the management again, that's when I came across like there's got to be an easier way to do this. And so finding those scheduled messages that like cut the work out at least by half.
Yeah.
And so every now and then, like you'll get like a message that like someone will be like, oh, this is when I'm arriving. And then like you'll have a scheduled message that's like, when are you arriving? And you're like, oh, that doesn't look great. It's great to take it really seriously, but then also to recognize that like when it's your houses and when it's your business, like it is so hard to not take it so seriously and personally. Mm-hmm. But I think that sort of when you are able to say like, okay, well, that person got a redundant message, like they're going to kind of, if it's going to affect their stay, then that's more about who they are as a traveler. With some people that there isn't really anything that you can do, they're going to have a great time or not, regardless. Right.
Can you tell me your crazy story about like the Airbnb guest?
I've got so many instances where people were just like really mean or disrespectful to the house. We had one recently where people were like, they had these like really large canisters of whippets and they were doing like dozens of whippets. They were all like in the hot tub and like there was food in the hot tub and like the whole thing had to be drained out. And I mean, so I don't even know if that's really like an interesting thing to share, just like gross stuff.
How do you evaluate whether or not an Airbnb is gonna be profitable? How do you figure that out?
For me, I think the biggest things would be, I mean, I look for a place that I'd want to stay in myself. And so for me, that is houses that are remote, houses that don't have neighbors. For me, it's great when they're a little bit hard to get to. There's some people that stay at the places and are kind of miffed that the house is difficult to get to. But yeah. I think that that's like really par for the Joshua Tree course. And I think that it's great if the house is simple. I go back and forth between some of my higher end homes and some of my more modest homes, which ones are more successful. I think that the higher end ones have to have all of the amenities, everything to really get up to the higher end thing. There's certain times that it's like, oh, it'd be great to just have the higher end ones and, you know, because they make as much as like 3 or 4 of the smaller ones. But then I do feel like the smaller ones are very consistently booked. Mm. And then it's also kind of a pleasure with the smaller ones. There tends to be like a better kind of outlook on the experience. Like even if I had a house that was the same size as another one, but one is like designed in a modest way and one's designed in like a higher end way, it's almost as if the people at the higher end one are going to have more problems.
Oh.
And it's an interesting sort of like psychology behind, I think, the modesty of the one kind of like drums out people's egos or drums out their expectations. Whereas the higher end one, it's like almost like they're looking for problems.
Interesting.
And I don't know what that is, but I'm grateful to have the diversity in the projects, especially being able to stay at the places myself. I think the most important thing, and I've had a few friends buy places out here that are like in lots, you know, and they're like in very much what feel like neighborhoods.
Right.
Not only is that unappealing to a short-term renter, but it's also, I think that it's sort of not what Airbnb should be out here.
Got it.
And because I think one of the biggest complaints about short-term rentals out here is that they have their negative impact on neighborhood. And so when you've got a house like this that's on 5 acres, acres is far away from everything. The effect, I think, is much more minimal. Whereas if it's a place where kids could be playing, or it's a place where people feel comfortable knowing who's in the house at all times, it doesn't make sense to buy it in those neighborhoods.
Got it. What are like some of the top things you recommend people like put into their Airbnb, which gets a lot of like great reviews?
Just off the top of my head, I feel like if you can avoid it, queen size beds suck. Like I think that if you can fit a king size bed in there, it's definitely the way to go. Okay. I think it doesn't take anything more to make. I think the sheets are all kind of like minimally more expensive, and it really does like set the place. Another thing that I think people really appreciate is outdoor beds. Really adds a lot. I think even more so than hammocks, because I think hammocks like look cool and are like fun, you know, as like a prop. Napping place or a prop, or like a place to read a book or temporarily. But like to be laying in a bed, fully horizontal, looking at the stars, it's really a memorable experience. I think that for years I resisted the hot tubs. I had a stigma in my head that it would turn the houses into like a different type of experience.
Like a party place.
Yeah, party place. And like even too, like I have a real cabin house that I thought didn't need a TV. And I was super wrong about that. Mm. Like having a TV, I just didn't think it went with the look, but so many people want to watch TV on their trips. There's not a lot to do at night, so it's definitely understandable to watch TV. Frankly, the more they're watching TV, the less they're bothering me. So it's like, let's just, you know, give them all of the streaming services. Let's just make
all
sure
all the distractions.
That, yeah.
Okay.
And so let's get them set up. I think probably in a few years, I'll just give them VR headsets. And,
you also have the Sonos.
Yeah. So
I really appreciate that.
At some of the places, I think that's one, it depends on the project. So like at some places that would have more neighbors than yours, I try to provide speaker things that maybe are less spacious.
Okay.
And which is also too why I like the Apple HomePod Mini that in the bedrooms at your place. Yeah. Because they have great sound, but much less bass.
Got it.
And then also too, most of the TVs have Spotify built into the smart TV, which can do good music as well.
You also do cement or concrete ground or flooring.
Yes, I do like the concrete flooring. One of the things is that either the hardwood or the laminate flooring, it's one of those things that I would feel like I would have to do myself. The concrete flooring I don't do. But no, the concrete is really the best option. It photographs very well. Yeah. This is an overlay, so it isn't, I've got a few projects that are the actual slab of the house, which is the ideal scenario. Okay. So if a cabin or a house has unfinished concrete slab flooring, it's the most ideal because it's just indestructible. Like it will last forever and there's nothing that can either damage it, or the other thing is that water can affect these overlays. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that as far as the look, everything goes with it.
Would you ever sell any of your Airbnbs?
That's another good question. I haven't been able to this point. And people always ask what I do for this. They'll ask what I do and then I explain what I do and they say, oh, so you flip houses. And I always correct them that it isn't flipping houses because the definition is buying and selling it within the same year. And I also think too that there's kind of a stigma with flipping houses that it's very different from the way that I do houses. I haven't been able to sell any of them. Part of me is kicking myself a little bit that like I could have probably sold them all for quite a bit 4 months ago. And I think maybe everyone with real estate is thinking that. And but no, I am to this point still too attached to let them go.
Yeah, the timing the market is hard.
That's... It's really hard. I know. It's so hard. I mean, just the stock market, it's like, you know, you're in something and then it goes up and then you're like, I should, you know, it just is. And then when you see it in hindsight, it's like, oh, I could have predicted that. Like, it seems so simple. And the fact is that you definitely could not have. Because everyone said we were going to be in a recession like since 2020. Like it was doomsday for a while and that didn't happen.
Maybe like 8-9 years of like, like straight vertical growth.
Yeah.
Where can people find you or like follow you?
I'm pretty new to Instagram, but my Instagram is Joshua Tree Stays. If you were to look for the Airbnbs, they're also just on Google. You can type in Ryan Airbnb Joshua Tree and it's all of those first ones.
Okay. Yeah, you guys highly recommend checking out his Airbnbs because they are so well done. And like we've talked, if you guys like watched this whole thing, he like actually is super involved in them himself. So he's like, they're super like well curated and designed and stuff. And I feel like you can't get that type of like quality and experience with those like mass produced Airbnbs, right? So you're doing some awesome things and thank you for talking to us.
Thank you. Thank you as well.
Anyways, I hope you guys got some great value out of this episode. If you guys did, I'd love to ask you for a quick favor. If you could just take 30 seconds and write us a review on whatever platform you are listening to this on, that would help us immensely. Plus, the more reviews we get, the more this podcast is going to be pushed out and the more free value we can give other people. Anyways, I appreciate your time, you guys, and I'll see you in the next episode. Peace.